Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to the, this must be about the 90th meeting of the Energy Oversight Committee. This is the August 23rd, 2016 meeting of the Joint Interim Committee on the Department of Energy Oversight. There's something about the interim committees. They all have these names that go on forever.
I think it's the 29th, Mr. Chair.
It's the 29th? Oh, I looked at the posted date. Excuse me. August 29th. Stand corrected. All right, members. Well, Representative Hack will not be with us this morning, and Representative Vega Peterson has indicated she'll be a little bit late, so we're going to go ahead and get started. We've had lots of information, and now's the point where we need to turn and start working on our recommendations, whatever those will be. And I guess I would start out by asking members, do you have all the information you need at this point? Staff has sent out the comments that we got from the field, and I've noticed that at least I was seeing a number of additional ones were sent directly, which I hope got to the staff and are on OLIS as well. So we've got a lot of information. Any comments before we get started? And my sense is what makes sense to me, and I'm open to a different approach here, is we've heard a lot about the different programs that we just sort of walk through the programs, and as we look and talk about whether those programs are still needed or not, and if so, if needed with any refinements, well, welcome, Representative.
Good morning.
I've just told folks you were going to be a little late, but you aren't. Anyway, so as we go through those, I think that will suggest, as we talk about the program structure at the end, so if that makes sense, let's do it that way. Anybody have any thoughts about that or concerns? Seeing that, we've got them listed on the agenda, so we'll start out with the first program that's on the list here is the Nuclear Safety and Emergency Preparedness. Actually, two things there. Thoughts about people. I mean, does anybody feel like this is something that is what we saw and heard is not necessary or needs to be changed in any way? Senator.
Thank you, Senator Beyer. From the testimony and what we've been able to determine, and I had my staff go to Hanford, it would appear to me that this division primarily studies and correlates Washington staff's work. I don't see, and I'm certainly open to correction, but I don't see where this staff on this division is doing virtually any original work. So I would think that this could very easily be transferred to DEQ, perhaps with one FTE to track it and pay the taxpayers a significant amount of money.
Other comments? Representative Holby.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. With due all respect, I do disagree with that. I think this particular division is well suited in the Department of Energy, and it is really pretty important to make sure the interests of Oregon are represented in the process and decisions of what happens at Hanford. I recognize that also their funding is, I believe, mostly from the federal government, and it does not come out of the ESA. After visiting Hanford personally myself, I really think the department does represent Oregon's concerns and makes those concerns known to both the state of Washington and to the federal government, and provides, you know, our point of view from Oregon and not just a rubber stamp for whatever Washington does. I think Oregon is really has a specific interest that's very important to be represented, and would, from my point of view, is really a necessary part of the agency that we should keep I think it's functioning quite well.
Mr. Kaplan, a quick question. The representative noted that the program was totally funded by the federal government. Is that correct? Make sure we understand that.
I don't know that I said totally, but...
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, for the record, Michael Kaplan, director of the Oregon Department of Energy. It is primarily funded by...
What is primarily?
Overwhelming majority. There is some ESA in every division that we have, but by and large, it's federally funded.
Okay. So not a direct cost on the state taxpayers to maintain the effort we have. And it's not just the staff. There's an oversight committee as well.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee... taxpayer, if you mean federal taxpayer, we do get federal dollars. So in that respect, there is, as far as state taxpayer, we don't get any general funds. So no, it would all be, it's either a federal grant or through the ESA.
And it's one of the things we know is that Oregon is a donor state. We send more money east than we get back. Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As long as we have the director here, in my opinion, there's no doubt we need to be participating. The question is whether the Department of Energy is a better location for it or DEQ. In your opinion?
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, Representative Bentz, I think that there are several reasons that nuclear safety makes the most sense for us. One is the primary federal agency responsible for that cleanup is the Department of Energy. So the relationship that we have there, it's not an EPA cleanup. It's Department of Energy's responsibility. The second issue is a big part of that division's programs are to drill for emergency release of nuclear materials, and that usually means elevating very directly and swiftly to the governor. Our staff in the Nuclear Safety and Emergency Preparedness Division find that it is a quicker route to the governor in an agency like ours than putting it as a smaller division in a much larger agency. I also think that the... advocacy role that we play is not, we're not a regulator in that cleanup. DEQ is typically, their role is regulation. Our role is very different. We are advocating very specifically for Oregon's interests in that cleanup. So it doesn't quite fit in with their mission. It fits much closer in with the identity that we've carved out at the Department of Energy.
Follow up. Mm-hmm. The funding mechanism through the department, our Department of Energy, is through the ESA partially. And if we shifted to DEQ, we'd have to find the money somewhere else, I guess. Is that a correct statement? And if so, how much are we talking about? I heard the word primarily from federal sources, but that means secondarily there's something from the ESA.
And can I add to your question? When you're addressing that, I don't want to be confused by the difference within the department. There's emergency preparedness, which includes your role with oil as well, which I think is funded through ESA, but we were addressing primarily the nuclear issue.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, Representative Bentz, I'll get to that question first. We have emergency preparedness on the petroleum side, but we also do emergency preparedness on the nuclear safety side. So a large part of our work is Oregon's primary interest is the Columbia River and the agricultural resources that are very close to Hanford. So to the extent that there is airborne release or we've had fires in that region right now, given all the lightning strikes, that is something we're actively and consistently monitoring and drill under the supervision of the U.S. Department of Energy. So there is emergency preparedness on both sides. The distinction in terms of what ESA does fund, the petroleum and Cascadia and LNG emergency preparedness, USDOE's funding does cover the drilling that we do on the nuclear safety side. So there are two separate sort of, or almost three separate different emergency preparedness roles that we have. As far as the funding, I did not bring the figures with me today. There are approximately $2 million or plus or minus provided by USDOE, and a few hundred thousand, if that's ESA. I don't know that funding mechanism for what was left over would obviously have to be figured out if it went to another agency.
Follow up. Thank you. So that last remark, the funding mechanism would have to be figured out. In other words, is the ESA specific to the DOE, or if this exercise was shifted to DEQ, would that funding follow?
Chair by our members of the committee, Representative Benz. I don't know what the statute says. I would assume that it's specific to the Department of Energy, but I wouldn't want to hazard a guess right now.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Olson.
If we possibly remove divisions from the Department of Energy, would the ESA still be in force?
The what?
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, Senator Olson, that would be a question for the legislature. That would all be a function of the mechanism that was used and how you wanted to alter statute. I wouldn't know.
Okay. Follow up.
As
far as regarding the nuclear safety division, Senator Whitsitt mentioned the fact that it could be under Department of Environmental Quality, which is probably, in my opinion, a good place to put it because they deal with the environment and all the environmental regulations. And you're right, they deal with regulations. If something were to happen at Hanford, what is our nuclear department prepared to do to prevent anything coming to Oregon?
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, Senator Olson, if something happened at Hanford, there would be nothing that we could do to prevent it from getting to Oregon. What our role is to coordinate response. Those drills that I referenced earlier are about mobilizing a number of state agencies who are responsible for the health and wellness of Oregonians. So primarily we're talking about agriculture, keeping the food stock safe from getting into our food supply if it were contaminated. So it's about monitoring and ensuring the health and safety of people in our food supply. So there's no way, you know, obviously the air current can take a radioactive release in any direction it wants to go. So primarily the role is response.
I'll follow up.
Mm-hmm.
On the response side, isn't that basically kind of what DEQ does with air quality? It could be able to respond also.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, Senator Olson, I don't want to speak for DEQ's responsibilities. I don't know their organization as well. I know that our response is an immediate emergency response, in which we convene a number of agencies in an emergency operations center. It's real time. It certainly doesn't play out over a series of months. It's usually in a series of hours and days.
A follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
What would that response look like if it was an air disaster?
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, Senator Olson, obviously everyone is different. But as I mentioned, we convene a number of state agencies in our emergency operations center. We monitor the release. We monitor the response in the communities, communicate obviously with local officials on the ground, and again, prioritize based on the kind of the kind of situation that we're dealing with, and they do vary, would dictate what the response would be specifically.
Your follow-up?
Follow-up.
I don't mean to be technical or picky, but you're kind of dancing around. You say that you have a response to protect the people, but you haven't said what the response is other than to get agencies together. So once you get the agencies together, then what happens? What's the follow-up to that? How do we protect the people? How do we protect the food stock?
So Chair Beyer, members of the committee, Senator Olson, as I said, we can't keep them necessarily from being contaminated. Again, if it's an air release, it might potentially get to Oregon. So the idea is to identify where that contamination is, ensure that food doesn't reach the food supply. It is very much situational dependent, as opposed to, it really does matter on what the particular scenario is. We'd be happy to get you. We are drilled fairly frequently by USDOE. I'd be happy to get some of those scenarios to you and show you what our specific response is to those.
Follow up. On an air release, then, are you prepared to track the direction of the contaminant, or would some other agency do that, like DEQ?
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, Senator Olson, we do that.
You have the technical ability and the equipment to do it.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, Senator Olson, yes, we do.
Okay. And the people on your staff and the nuclear safety are trained and qualified to run this equipment?
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, Senator Olson, yes, we do have an emergency response planner, and our team is the most familiar with what's going on at Hanford, what's there, the kind of materials that are impacted, and when and if an airborne release would take place. So, yes, we are qualified to do that work.
And one last question, if you don't mind.
Go for it.
If there is a release, would the federal Department of Energy be the primary agency involved in charge?
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, Senator Olson, as the primary agency for Hanford, that's our presumption. Certainly, it could expand. Again, circumstance dependent.
Okay, thank you.
Representative, thank you. I'm curious. The team that you just mentioned, where is it? Who is it? This team that's going to respond in the case we have a Fukushima or some event? Is that what you're talking about happening? Is that what we're dancing around here?
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, Representative Benz, this was the first presentation that we had for nuclear safety. So it was that team, Ken Niles and his division, the six FTE that we have there would be responsible for that work, in addition to all of the other agencies who we coordinate when there's a Hanford incident.
Mm-hmm. Follow up. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we have six people, including Ken, that are going to protect Oregon. That's what you're saying, because I don't see that team running around running this equipment. But I could be wrong. What we're all trying to get at here is, are we doing something where it's just kind of an observation deck that we stare into Washington and see what's going on, or is there something more that's coming from all of this that's going to protect us? That's what we're all asking you. So tell us, is it six people are going to protect Oregon? Is that what we're hearing?
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, Representative Benz, no, six people alone can't do that work. We coordinate with an entire state government for that responsibility. We are the coordinating entity in that, and we are the experts in that. Additionally, the role at Hanford or the cleanup at Hanford is on Washington territory. It's a federal cleanup. Oregon does have an interest in ensuring that cleanup and that work is done with our interests in mind and outcomes that we would like to see. Interests don't always align. So having an advocacy role in that cleanup to ensure that our responsibilities and our desires are met over a cleanup that will likely continue for another 50 or 60 years, I think, is incredibly important.
Thank you.
Let me take my turn. Okay, Mike, my sense on all that, and I guess my perspective is shaded heavily by having read that history of the federal government's involvement, and I believe that your primary role is keeping tabs on what the feds are doing or not doing is probably more appropriate there, and working hand in glove with our federal delegation to make sure that the federal government continues to do what they're supposed to do there. There's a real clear indication to me in that report, because it's there, is you've had to beat them collectively. The two states have had to beat them about the shoulders to get the feds to continue their effort. And if we didn't do that, it's very easy for people, I mean, I've worked with them a lot on the east side of the Rockies, to forget that the west side even exists. And it's their problem, and it's making sure that they take care of those tanks that are buried there. I would guess that our greatest threat is leakage from the tanks getting into the waterway, and probably the greatest threat to that is the earthquake that we keep talking about. I'm not sure about that. Forest fires certainly are a threat there. Forest fires, that area burns just like everything up around Spokane is burning right now. And that would, beyond just the nuke there, it endangers a nuclear generating station that's there that provides a big chunk of Bonneville's power right now.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, I think you're absolutely right. I would say that there doesn't have to be an earthquake for those tanks to be in jeopardy. It's already antiquated.
Y'all know they're
technology.
Already leaking, and they really don't want to fix them. But
so I think the advocacy role that Oregon plays there is deeply important to ensure to the greatest extent we possibly can hold USDOE accountable for their work there.
And the real threat to all of that is to the towns and residents who live alongside the river now. If that radiation gets into the river, then it's essentially you're looking at a big swatch of land that no longer could be used for production or drinking water. I mean, a number of people would be endangered.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, certainly depends on the circumstances, but that is in the realm of possibility for sure.
Over years, I've watched it. Oregon and Washington's interests are not always parallel on that. Understandably. I mean, the thing's on their side of the river, on their land, not in ours. So I guess from my perspective, there is a need, not talking about where it needs to be, but there is a need for Oregon to have a strong, knowledgeable presence as politicians shift and others. It's nice to have a strong staff presence that understands the situation and staffs the advisory council that does have a lot more technical expertise than we do.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, that's certainly the argument that I think we made at our first hearing. That's absolutely correct.
Yes, sir, Chair.
Not quite yet.
Oh,
Senator Wissett and then Senator Olson.
Thank you, Chair Beyer. Mike, on the my understanding is the most likely nuclear accident there would be this the extension of this inexorable plume of radioactivity heading toward the Columbia River. So if it gets into the Columbia River, and let's hope it doesn't, but let's say it does, have you modeled or has your group in any way tried to determine whether there would actually be a problem, or would the dilution of the river take care of it, or would this cause contamination within the fish dock? Would it cause contamination downriver along the banks? Could it cause contamination in irrigation water? Have you done the homework on what that could result in?
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, Senator Whitsitt, we've done homework on all kinds of potential situations and drilled on many of them. Again, I think it's very sensitively dependent on what it is that we're talking about, given the scope of the pollution that's at Hanford. I'd be happy to sort of get some of that information back to you, but it wouldn't be up for me to sort of speak in broad terms about potential or hypothetical situations. So we'd be happy to come back to you on
that. But you have modeled?
Follow up.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, Senator Whitsitt, I want to be really careful not to say that we've modeled every particular scenario. Obviously, you know, there's so much that's at Hanford. It's really I don't want to say that we have planned for every single scenario. We've done a lot, and we've drilled on a lot of particular occasions.
That's like the nation's top Superfund site.
Right. That's exactly right. So yes, we have planned for some, but I don't want to speak in broad terms.
I interrupt you.
On the river, fine. There's same line of questioning, but. On the River Governance Panel, we've had several presentations on Hanford, and each time it's focused on that plume of radioactivity headed toward the river. It's not several plumes, it is a plume. And my question was, has your agency, and I understand you don't have that information, but I'd like to see it, have you made plans for what the likely scenario will be if that plume reaches the river, and what you're going to do about it when it does?
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, Senator Whitsitt, yes, we have done some of that planning. I'd be happy to get you some of that information.
Thank you.
Senator Olson.
Thank you very much.
And Senator Representative.
Mr. Kaplan, one of the concerns that I have, and one of the things I've asked for several times, was the educational backgrounds. And when I look at your staff on nuclear safety, it concerns me because we don't have any nuclear physicists or physicists that are there, and you talk about expert evaluation. It concerns me the depth and breadth of their education relating to a nuclear disaster when they don't have that educational qualification to step forward and say, hey, I understand what this is going to do. Could you answer that for me?
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, Senator Olson, we are not talking about a fission event. Typically, we're talking about groundwater or air release. So hydrologists and geologists and that sort of level of expertise is actually more of the role, understanding how groundwater is moving at the site, understanding the impact people and agriculture and things like that is more of the expertise that we feel like we need right now.
And do you have that?
Senator Beyer, Chair Beyer, members of the committee, Senator Olson, we're very confident in our team right now. That's correct.
So you didn't answer my question. Do you have hydrologists and geologists in the Nuclear Safety Committee?
Chair Beyer, Senator Olson, we do have that expertise. That's correct.
could you define who those people are?
Chair Beyer, Senator Olson, I'd be happy to get you that information. I don't have it with me right now.
Thank you. Representative Foley.
Thank you. So Mike, speaking about nuclear safety and those sorts of things, I would assume that there are best practices on how to handle nuclear materials and best practices around nuclear energy as such, because it's my understanding we have other nuclear materials and nuclear facilities in Oregon besides Hanford, and also that there's transportation of those materials sometimes through Oregon, and so does the Oregon Department of Energy have a role in looking at those issues and making sure best practices are met in any of those sorts of topics, and also examining potentially the future of nuclear energy in itself in Oregon.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, Representative Holvey, we do have a program that is responsible for monitoring the radiologic transportation of materials across the state. We also have two active research facilities at Reed University and OSU. We play a role interfacing with them. We also have the Trojan facility, which is shut down in Oregon, that has the nuclear storage materials on site waiting for essentially a permanent disposal site. So all of those are roles that we play.
How about the medical side? There's a lot of medical disposal of nuclear materials.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, as far as the transportation of those across the state, if they reach a certain threshold, we have those. But as far as direct oversight, that doesn't fall to us.
Who does that?
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, I believe that's OHA, but I'm not totally sure.
Okay, other questions? Okay, we kind of got off track a little bit in terms of where I was hoping we're going in terms of separating the function, the need for the function, from where that function ought to lie. I'd like to take that second half of that and put it to the end after we get through the functions, because we got a lot of different functions here that we may have to figure out later on. What I'm hearing, and I want to test this, is that with perhaps the exception of Senator Whitsitt, most people think there's a role for the nuclear safety side to maintain in some place.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
That's an important role for Oregon to make sure that we have some input on that. Is there any disagreement with that?
I would also note, Mr. Chair, that I've been going through stakeholder responses, and the overwhelming majority of stakeholders that have submitted testimony are of that same opinion.
Okay. So I want to move on to the other half of that, and it's the emergency preparedness, which, Mr. Kaplan, you left too soon. The piece of that one that struck me as we were going through this is the fact that the department is currently charged in that division with making sure that we, in the emergency preparedness system, you have the primary charge for making sure that in an event, whether it's an earthquake or some other civilian, that we have capacity for movement of fuels, liquid fuels in the state, and preparing for that. Is that correct?
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, that is absolutely correct. We have responsibility for petroleum response in the event of a state catastrophe. That's correct.
Nobody else has that connection that I'm aware of in the state.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, as you'll remember from our presentation, there are 18 primary state agencies that are responsible. Each has a different set of responsibilities, a different response area. Ours would be petroleum, and no other state agency has that responsibility currently.
I was struck in the Cascadia Rising evaluation, the tabletop that was done, that the availability of fuels turned out to be one of the most important functions that I think people had largely forgot about.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, there are no refineries in Oregon. All of our petroleum is either piped in from Washington or delivered, 90% of which is stored on ground or in Portland that is going to liquefy, and the overall petroleum supply will, in the event of Cascadia, we expect to go to virtually zero, other than what is already sort of stored, perhaps underground. And there won't be any electricity necessarily to pump it out of the ground. So the availability of fuel when you start going down the line in terms of the emergency response is pretty significant. Getting hospital generators up and running, getting police and first responders fueled up when there is no fuel is going to be a really significant challenge if and when Cascadia happens.
So certainly a necessary. Actually, those refineries up in Washington probably won't be around either. But
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, if they are around, certainly the pipes, the hundreds of miles of pipes that get them into Oregon, if they are around, still have to be inspected virtually every inch by hand all the way up till the refinery before they would be allowed to continue. So one way or another, we're going to be likely without fuel for a significant amount of time.
Yeah, so it strikes this senator that we probably have a need for having somebody doing the plan and being familiar with that and available in the instances of an event. Others have a different perception on that. Where it's at is a different question. Does anybody disagree with that? That that's a vital function? I see none. Okay. Well, anything else on this particular program division? All right, let's move down to the planning and innovation side then. Okay, comments. It's a big section. Senator Whitsitt, you look like you're ready to go.
Well, I do. Mr. Chair, I'm not sure. Certainly Oregon needs an agency to plan for our energy needs, and there's no question about that. My concern is the priorities of the department in making those plans. And I don't see where, first of all, let's talk about need. Oregon has a superabundance of power, so for the most part, the agency is planning to use Oregon resources to supply California consumers. The agency doesn't appear to take into consideration the efficiency of wind and solar, even though they're planning for and the siting commission is actually citing these things. We know that they're both wind and solar are becoming more efficient, but they are standing alone. They're still quite inefficient. I haven't seen where the agency is really planning ahead to coordinate, and maybe I have missed this, but to coordinate the future wind and solar development with the required thermal backup, because the Columbia River now is pretty well maxed out on how much it can when the wind stops blowing, when the high pressure area comes in, when it's cold and hot, the wind stops blowing, and they have to use hydro. Well, that's pretty well that capacity is pretty well used up, and I'm not seeing where the agency is coordinating their planning as to the thermal backup. And I'd be very interested to hear what they have to say about that. And then we have buried about $1.5 billion of taxpayer credits in these in primarily in wind and solar. And when does the Oregon taxpayer get a return on investment on that huge amount of money? As a matter of fact, there's still, as near as I can tell from Mr. Ellenbeck, Alanac, there's about somewhere around $400 million of Betsy's and EIPs that are still not haven't been redeemed yet. Even so, I mean, there's a lot more money going out there. So, those are my concerns that on the planning innovation. Are we coordinating? And then the other thing is that on the planning, Are we looking at this as a, the state as a holistic entity so that the cumulative effects of all these windmills and all these solar plants and so forth are being taken into consideration as opposed to just the proliferation of windmills along the Columbia River and the proliferation of solar generation plants in some place like in Klamath County on high-value farmland?
Well, Senator, I would challenge one thing you said on that.
Only one thing there.
But and having had a front row seat to the events in 2000, 2001, 2002, you may not always have all that hydropower. We had a lot less. We had a very, very unusual year, and frankly, with some of the changes we're seeing in the climate, that may happen again. But I don't want to belabor that point. Well, what I would like to do is let me finish here. What I heard you say is you think there is a role for planning, and but you don't like what they're doing now. So if, thinking forward, not backwards, what would you like or what do you think is the appropriate function, planning function, should be in the area of energy?
First, I would say with the hydro issue, Senator Beyer, that you make my point because even on again good hydro years and good water years, now we're maxed out. So in bad in poor years like 2001 or 2002, we would be in deep trouble without more thermal backup. How would I go about doing it? I would plan more for the needs of Oregon than for other states. I would look to the efficiency, and I would like to hear from the department as to if they have any concept of what the current wind generation efficiency is. And when I say efficiency, I mean what percentage of the nameplate capacity of those windmills are actually being produced and put online. What is their plan? I mean, do they have a plan, is it a coordinated plan to if we're going to continue to build these solar and wind generation facilities, do we have a plan? And what is that plan to make sure that there's enough thermal backup to make them efficient, to keep them online? And then the some computation of when and if there will ever be a return on investment to the taxpayers for the huge amount of money they've invested here.
So what I'm hearing you say, correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm trying to stay away from the department and talk about what I'm looking future, the mm-hmm. function. So what I'm hearing you say is that there, and I'll use my terminology, there is a need for somebody in state government to be expert in the energy area and help develop a state strategic plan with respect to that, to make sure that we have the state's needs covered, understanding the flow of power going both ways, and it's beyond power, too. I think you're talking about natural gas as well,
sure.
The combination there. And I'm going to add a piece, and probably have an independent technical expertise that could advise the legislature and the governor, the executive, on these things. One of the criticisms I did hear in the past was when the coal to clean bill happened last time, many of you have said you didn't feel like you had an independent voice coming to you talking about that.
That would be a fair assumption.
I don't think that's an assumption. I think it was a statement. Did I paraphrase fairly clearly what you're saying?
Senator Beyer, I believe there's a need for the agency, a planning innovation function. I think that the agency needs to redefine their mission and to
function.
to redefine their mission and to move forward with a business plan that makes sense to the taxpayer.
Okay, hearing that, Senator Olson, did you have a comment?
Yeah, I did. Thank you very much. In looking at an energy agency overview. 2013-15, the governor's budget, written by Tamara Brickman. She says that the Oregon Department's energy mission is to reduce the long-term costs of energy for Oregonians. And I've been on natural resources for 5 years, and I've never seen any of that yet. And I think if we have a Department of Energy, that would be one thing that would be critical, because what we've done is increase the cost of fossil fuels, and we've increased the cost of energy throughout, including electricity, by the legislation we've passed. And I think one of their, at least in my opinion, one of their downfalls is not to be, are not coming in as a contradictory agent and saying, okay, if we did this, this is the result, but if we do this, this would be the result. And that would follow their goal of long-term cost, to reduce the long-term costs of energy. And I don't see that their agency has done that.
So looking forward, what do I hear you saying, as I had a discussion with Senator Whitsitt, that there is a need for the function, but with a different focus, more independence, more advisory, and maybe more strategic?
Well, I think from looking back from back in 1975 when they were formed because of the energy crisis we had, I think that one of the things that I see that they probably misstepped in is demonstrate the workability of new technology. Have they demonstrated that? Have they brought it into the agencies or into our meetings in the Environment Natural Resources or any of the other committees and said, this is a new technology that we should look at to move forward? I don't think they've handled that properly to lower the cost to Oregonians. And is there a need for someone to know how to do this stuff? Absolutely. We must have expertise, and I think that's why last session or the session before we made this new scientific community that can give us information that we need. I think one of the things we need to do is maybe rely more on the universities for this information. But I think that the Department of Energy itself has been more cumbersome and an impediment to moving our state forward instead of helping. And then when Lisa Schwartzel was the director, I told that to her. I said, you know, you need to be an advocate for new energy and for energy transmission and not a detriment to what would be good for Oregon. And yeah, I think we're in the same position.
So what I heard you say is that there's a role for somebody in state government to be an advocate, or I would call it more an independent analyst of that, and doing that more strategic thinking on that regard. But you didn't like what he's done in the past. Well, didn't think it was fulfilled. Okay.
I have some other ideas that I will discuss
get them
with you.
Get them on the table.
Well, no,
if you're doing recommendations. Don't have to do it right now if you don't want to.
Well, we have a meeting afterwards that I was going to discuss it with you.
Okay. Down this side? Representative Hovey?
There's something I totally agree with Senator Olson on is really taking a look at the mission of the Department of Energy. I mean, once we go through and look at the programs and how they function, you know, how relevant they are and how we should refocus those if necessary. I think our Department of Energy's mission hasn't really been updated to match all the program changes and directions that the legislature has given to it in the last 20 years. And so I really think that, you know, we need to look at those programs, what we're really wanting to, what values we want out of the Department of Energy, and adjust their mission to match that. I think that's an exercise that this committee is at the end of the day, is going to have to take a look at once we go through these program areas.
Okay. Senator? Excuse me, Representative Pence.
Thank you.
Old habits.
Start with an
old insult. Habits.
You know? Start with an insult. Oh, thank you.
Didn't mean to insult you.
Yeah, that's right. Fine. So, the I got a great view of our Oregon energy policy when I attended the Commission on River Governance last week in Boise. And Commissioner Yost from Idaho, I posed a question for him in front of all of the folks there at the meeting about whether or not Oregon should have a Department of Energy. And he said, well, you certainly need something. You guys aren't doing any planning that we would think would help, which I thought was quite the observation. But again, that's from Idaho, so, you know, you have to take it with a grain of salt. But his thoughts were reflective of what other states see us doing here. And it wasn't a positive remark. And I think in large part it was driven by the coal to clean bill and the thought that we had left ourselves open to energy shortfalls. That's what he was saying. He's on the Northwest Power Planning Council, and much of what's been suggested here is that we need something more than that, and I would agree. The trouble with planning is there's never an end to it unless there's someone paying attention and driving that planning. And so that we'll get to, I think you've said, we're going to talk about the who later. But in my mind, there is no doubt about the need for it. There's no doubt. Now, who's going to be in charge of how to make it happen is the question. And I could walk down through all the things that we've heard different people remark upon in the last few minutes, but in my opinion, we need the planning function. We truly do. And we need the data function. And we need the measurement function. So that much of what we do around here has at least some sideboards or somebody coming in and saying, hey, you might want to think about this, and here's some data to back it up. So, yeah, I'm in favor of keeping that. The problem is going to be who is going to drive that planning piece.
Representative Bailey Peterson.
Thank you, Chair. So I also concur with a lot of what's been said here, and that we do have to look at the mission of the agency. I don't know that, you know, some of us weren't even alive when it was first written, so I think it's due for an update.
Wait a minute.
Mr. Chair, I object.
So I think it's actually, it hasn't kept pace with the changes of how the agency has functioned, but I think the core purpose of it, that we want to provide reliable energy to the people of Oregon, that's going to stay the same. But it's also some of the other things that they've been asked to do. We want that reflected in the mission. And I think it will also serve the legislature well to have the opportunity to put in what we actually want that agency to do. So I think that's a core piece. And I think that we need to have the data for the agency. We need the legislative body to have trust in the data that we're getting from the agency. And so we need to provide them the support and the resources to be able to do that. And then, you know, in terms of the planning, that has to be a piece of it as well. And I think that, you know, through this whole discussion that we've been having over the past several months, it has to be, you know, the work that they've done is directed by what we've passed and the bills that we've done. And so we need to provide them not just with, you know, reaction to what we've passed, but also give them the, have the planning in place to help them give us the information so that we can put good policy together that will serve their mission and the people of Oregon.
Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Senator Olson.
One thing I forgot to mention, both Representative Holvey and Representative Vega Peterson kind of touched on it. I think the department should be more autonomous, and by that I mean they shouldn't be so politically driven. Yes, we do give mandates that say we need to do this, but they need to look at the overall energy plan, all of it, including fossil fuels. And I know there's a large group of Oregonians that just absolutely loathe and despise fossil fuels. But we will, in my generation, I will never see the end of the use of fossil fuels, neither will you, Representative, because we need them. And I think that balance.
I don't know which one he was talking to. But.
Well, the one that was here before, or not after the Department of Energy was formed. The fact being is that it's a part of our history. It's something we will use forever, and we need to be more concerned with our oversight of all our energy requirements, not just renewable energy. Because one of the things I learned in a very appropriate course I went to was that when you get down to a finite source, a single source of energy, you're pretty well screwed if that source goes away. and we're relying so much on renewables, 50% renewable, and our backup is natural gas. Well, if the natural gas is disrupted, we're pretty much in trouble. And that's one of the concerns that I learned from this course, was the fact that you need to have a broad base of energy sources. And the more we drive up costs for energy because of the legislation we put forward, the less competitive our state becomes with everyone around us. And those are the things the Department of Energy should be looking at, and have the autonomy to be able to stand up and say, well, wait a minute, folks, you want to get rid of gasoline, but here's the problem if you try to do that. And I think that's things that we, the legislative body, should be able to count on, that we get a good scientific background to say that this legislation we're going to do will impact us this way. And I haven't seen Department of Energy do that. But there is a need for it.
Senator.
Thank you. Just following along with Senator Olson's comments, if you compare the dichotomy between how the Department of Energy functions and how PUC functions. PUC functions under a commission, appointed a commission. They are focused, in spite of occasional legislative override, on least cost energy production delivery to Oregon consumers. That's what they're trying to do. And the Department of Energy, on the other hand, appears to be politically driven and has the cost, from what I've been able to determine, the cost to the consumer and the cost to the public and the cost to taxpayers is somewhat irrelevant. I mean, they're going forward with this plan to imposed on them by the legislature to go to 50% renewable energy. But somewhere, I mean, the department, from my perspective, needs to be looking at the overall cost and feasibility of this thing in the future. And I think I'm saying the same thing that Senator Olson is that perhaps they need a commission and to oversee them, and I'm not putting words in Senator Olson's mouth, but perhaps a commission to oversee them, to give them direction and give them some insulation from the vagaries of our legislative oversight from one year to the next.
We heard that comment a couple of times from people who addressed this, that there might be a need or suggested a need to have a commission, both to make sure there's a wider perspective and frankly, to provide some political buffering. How do people feel about that? I'm not saying what it necessarily would look at, about is there a need for perhaps a commission? This is one of the few departments that doesn't have one. Well, Senator Edwards?
Mr. Chair, I mean, I think that's, I mean, for all of our discussion about taking politics out of this, I mean, sometimes I feel like the words politically driven are unfairly used.
Usually means you disagree.
Right, exactly, exactly. You disagree with the direction, the policy direction that other folks are pushing toward. I mean, you could, the incumbent interests in the economy, the incumbent interests in the energy economy, even, I mean, those are politically driven bodies as well, often. So I think governance is one of the key issues, because this committee can make a recommendation, and the next legislative session could set up, could redefine the mission, and then subsequent legislatures and the department, as it continues to develop, are going to interpret that in different ways, and it will continue to be driven or continue to be labeled as either political or otherwise. So I think the governance, to me, is really the key.
So what is that?
Having some sort of, whether that's a commission or something like that, but we all debate. And we set that to the side, and they, just like we do with our other agencies, we have a lot of, and even then you're not going to take the quote politics out of it. My God, look at the politics around appointing commissioners to the ODF&W or commission or the state the
But at least this side of the dais has a role in those who sets on those commissions.
Politically.
Yeah, I mean, it's still you're never going to take, you know, quote, politics out of the public discussion about where we ought to go. And what I think is good I mean, Senator Olson and I, you know, we get along fine, but we have fundamental disagreements about certain energy policy areas. And it needs to be out in the open. It needs to be a part of the public discussion, and people are going to label that politics.
So is that a yes about the idea of a commission?
I'm personally in favor of that idea, but still, though, I'm realistic in recognizing that that is not going to remove politics.
So, no, Senator Olson, where are you on the commission?
I would agree with Chris, but it's not going to remove politics, but at least kind of takes the legislature out of it a little bit.
Okay, so I take that as a yes.
Yes, you're absolutely correct.
Yeah,
Representative Vega Peterson?
You don't get the answer.
Yes. So I'm in favor of a commission if it's designed appropriately with appropriate balance. The challenge is, as with any commission, who's on it and from what area they're coming. And so I'm not enthusiastic about creating another commission that's most crazy. It's going to be politically driven, but the best we can hope for is balance in the membership.
So I would
say let's take a look at how we're going to design that commission and then go from there.
So that's a qualified yes.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Okay. Hobie, representative?
Co-chair Beyer, I have some, you know, reservations about a commission, largely that commission isn't always as responsive to the governor's office or the legislature. And I worry about the balance. I've looked around at our state government and the different commissions that agencies have, and they seem to be pretty unbalanced in terms of the makeup of those commissions. I like the idea of having a commission that's more independent, that's really looking at the energy issues. If we could achieve that, I would be supportive, but I do so with reservations about the politically driven balance on that particular commission.
Yes. Mr. Chair, may I ask a question? You were on the PUC. How was that for balance? And your mission was to make certain that we got the best energy rates that we could get.
Well, the PUC has a very clear legislative direction to get the least cost reliable electricity to the ratepayers. And I always looked at it, and I think others do, as they worked for the ratepayers. That's who they represented, were the ratepayers. And there was some balance. And that's always within the context of the rules that the legislature and the Congress set. So you always have those balancing issues. But that's a good example of you had a commission that had very clear guidance on what it was supposed to do. And I think we heard a little of that in the last session.
And I believe that we could put together a commission that would have that clear guidance, looking not only to make certain that Oregon got the best bang for their buck, but also the best technology and the best fuel sources, so that they could look at the overall picture and say, if we integrate all of this, this is going to be the greatest for Oregon.
Okay.
And I think a commission could do that.
So what I'm hearing folks say is, it sounds like we have unanimous agreement that there is a need for a rightly constructed commission with a rightly defined role and responsibilities. Any disagreement to that? So maybe, I don't think we're going to get through that today, but maybe what I would ask is, as we, between now and our next meeting, if you put a little thought time into that, maybe could jot some notes down about what that would look like in your mind, and maybe if you could share those with the staff,
mm-hmm.
and then we can all take a look at that and see if that's a point we can work on towards our recommendations. Okay? Representative Dents.
Sure. The the concept of the commission suggests that we all, at least I think, that our that the activities within this department are worthy of that kind of additional expense, because it would be significant. The department ends up doing an awful lot of work with its commission in anticipation of those meetings and all the stuff that goes with the care and feeding of a commission. It's like a board of directors. So what we're basically saying, at least what I'm saying, is I think the issues that are under this umbrella that this department would be in charge of are of such a value that it's worth that type of investment. And I'm saying that. But it's going to be driven by the mission statement. And we haven't gotten there yet, really. We're working toward it, I'm guessing. But that, to me, I think those issues I think the issues we've been discussing and looking back, we would have benefited from having a commission. Because your hope would have been when the Betsy came up or something else like that came up, these people on the commission would have said, hey, what the heck? That's our hope, isn't it? And that means we've got to make sure we get this thing right. And so the reason I'm withholding all unqualified support for it, because I think it's right, is that I want to see those other pieces.
Okay, maybe the other half of that charge to us is spend some time, and I think Rep. Senator Olson said he has, writing up maybe what would, if we had a department, what would you see the mission being? What elements would include in that? I'm trying to start moving this towards some recommendations. All righty. Is there more on planning and innovation? I think we've kind of worked this horse pretty hard. All right, we'll let that one go back to the barn. The next issue, then, is energy facility siting. That probably is the issue that we got the most comments on from anybody. And I will just start out by saying, in my opinion, it's really needed. We heard solid support for it from, frankly, all of the users of the system, the utilities, and solid opposition by those citizens who have been affected by it at different times. I personally think that needs some work. I'm not completely sure we can totally define what that work might be during this this committee, but we may want to suggest, you know, my current thinking is we may want to suggest to the legislature that they impanel a special task force of work group just to rework that. I have a bias towards wanting more of a formal kind of process on that, a adjudicated process, but that may not work. You know, I know I've talked to Mr. Kaplan about that a little bit, and there's some concerns about how that might work, the contested case process. I don't like the current process real well, but because I think it muddles the public opinion. But that's kind of where I'm starting from, and I'm pretty open on it myself. So, other thoughts? Representative Bench, you've had some strong thoughts about the process. You were directly affected with
these
it at different times.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just say I'm totally in favor of looking at the process and trying to improve it. I would say that our chances of our making it better are limited, because at the end of the day, that which FSEC is trying to do when it comes to transmission lines is going to be a negative for those across whose property the line is going to pass. And so no matter how one tries to adjust things, they're still going to be losers, no matter how we do it. And that, but I'm not saying we can't do it better. I'm just saying that when the outcome is going to be so negative, it's very, very difficult.
Do you think in the couple months we have left that we can improve upon it? I mean, you know it better than anybody.
Well, we owe it to those who are so concerned to try. Whether we'll get something done in 2 months is a real question. So, but I'm more than happy to try.
Okay. Others? Senator Whitsitt?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that the hearings process for the Energy Facility Siting Council should be either pushed more toward what the Office of Administrative Hearing does, or perhaps what the PUC does. What we're hearing and what I've experienced in the past is that the individual public members and groups are at least have the perception that they don't have input into the decision making, that their comments are not even recorded and never show up in the proceedings. And since it is an administrative process, the only way it gets to court is through the appeals process to the appellate court, and in the FSEC it goes directly to the Supreme Court. But the Supreme Court can only look at what is in the record, what has been allowed in the record by that administrative law judge. And if that administrative law judge does not allow a contested case, then nothing's in the record opposing it. And that's not the way PUC runs, and that's not the way the Office of Administrative Hearings runs. So there's something in this process that is not working.
Mm-hmm. Other comments? Representative?
So if the decision of this group is to go forward with some change, how would we go about doing that? What is the plan of action? Because Senator Whitsitt suggests if there are major error problems in the process, well, let's get about it, but how do we go about doing that? What would your thought be? Do we make a subgroup of this group, or what's the thought?
My personal thought is, and again, I admit a bias from how I worked with it at the PUC, we had it was totally independent process in terms of you had an administrative, very well-trained administrative law judges, and they're trained in more technical expertise than the panel, the central panel is, because it goes, the cases go forever and there's a lot of things going on there. But in that case, you have interveners. They're usually more professional interveners rather than regular citizens, although that's not unusual to have somebody in. And the fact pattern is gathered and then the record is closed and then the commission makes a decision. I think as I look at it, one of the issues with the siting process is there starts out with a presumption that a power line or a pipeline will be sited. And then there are, I think it's 18 conditions that have to be met. And under the current process, the judgment of the siting council is on working with the proponent to get to, if they can, a point where they've met all of those 18 conditions. And a lot of that has to do with environmental issues and, I guess, movement of the line, adjustment of that to get a preferable path. But at the end of the day, under the current law, if a proponent meets all of the conditions, the commission can't say no. And I think that's irritating to some of the people who don't like it. You know, if you got a power line coming through your property or something like that. I mean, but that's generally the way it works in other states. And certainly, if you're doing an interstate line that's under the federal government's control, you have virtually no, as you well know, following the gas line down there. You just don't have any ability to influence it at all. You have more of an ability to influence EPSAC than that. So that would be the process. I mean, it's so I guess if I were to look at it, I would probably look at formalizing it, the wrong word, because it's already formalized, and probably changing it to clarify the process and make it clear to people how it's going to work, and try to add an element, more of an element of perceived independence. That's the best I can do off the cuff. Senator Whitsitt and then Co-Chair Hovey.
Chair Beyer, I certainly agree with you that they're not in my backyard. Nobody wants a power line over their house. That's just how it works, you know. But there is there's a huge expense to the private sector when they, whether they have it just not in my backyard or whether they actually have a legitimate, I don't want, you know, we're not going to do this because. Often the environmental impact statement might be a couple thousand pages. And then, you know, there's all kinds of stuff that you have to go through. If you have to hire a professional, you know, or an attorney to do, you know, to go through this stuff, the expense is ridiculous. In the particular instance that we had in Klamath in 2000, We divided up a whole lot of stuff, and I am fortunate to have a wife who is a geologist and could go through a lot of stuff. But even then, and we were allowed a contested case hearing in this particular case, but the starting cost to appeal to the United States Supreme, or to the Oregon Supreme Court, is $100,000. And we had no less than Ed Sullivan do that. He liked this, and he did it for half price. So it only cost us $50,000. You know, that's a lot of money. You know, and that is when we were doing the research. So there's some way there, the playing field. I don't know how to do this, but I mean the playing field needs to be leveled somehow. Up against Berkshire Hathaway on one side, and a couple of soccer moms on the other. You know, I mean, they can both have a legitimate point of view, but the private sector soccer moms don't have a chance because they don't have the money.
Mm-hmm. I hear you, Representative Polk.
Thank you, Co-Chair Byer. Yes, I think this particular issue is going to take a lot of review, a lot of work. I think it may be appropriate to. For this committee to put a recommendation or proposed legislation in for 2017 on FSEC specifically by itself, and have time for some informational meetings to review how, as Senator Whitsitt may have pointed out, how the FSEC process compares to general administrative law, which is and really have some qualified people around administrative law that ensures that there is fairness and there is a chance for representation in that process. At least, you know, I'm not sure we're ever going to get the soccer moms up to speed with Warren Buffett, but you know, we should take a look at that. I think it's extremely complicated, though, and I think I recognize the comment you made at the beginning, there's some presumptions going into the FSEC process that aren't really the same in administrative law. But I think we should take a look at how those processes deliver a fair process for people to have different points of view and to get them onto the table and to really have a much more involved citizenry in making, you know, their opinions more public and actually having them considered, but I'm not exactly sure how we're able to accomplish that. I think it's a topic that warrants a separate discussion by itself almost, and you know, I can see having informational hearings about administrative law, informational hearings about the Court of Appeal process, what can be considered on the record, what can't, because FSEC is different. It goes to the Supreme Court, not the Court of Appeals, and, you know, what are the ramifications of all that? So, you know, I think that is, that topic by itself is something we should chew on almost separately.
Whether any change that we would end up making would require statutory change, require legislation, and I would think that we may end up with recommendations that have one or more bills anyway, but I certainly, if we're going to take this one on, it ought to be a bill. And there is some merit in Representative, I think what you said, Hovey's idea of maybe putting a bill out there for, if nothing else, to at least get a discussion in the next session on it, formalize a little bit more. But if we were going to do that, I would think we may want to draw on some people's expertise or just to sit down and try and work something like that, a couple of members, and I'm looking down at the expert.
so if I may, this is ground that's been tilled
plowed
and retilled.
Many times, yeah.
Right, and so, but there's, the best example in my district, 19 million acres, and you're trying to move the B2H power line around, doesn't matter where you move it, it's still going to be one of my constituents that's going to be hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So no matter what degree of process, one of my people is still going to get hurt.
Yeah.
And so the ultimate outcome of this exercise is one of my people is still going to get hurt. So I'm, but I'm more than happy to try to go in and try to rethink, retool, redesign the process. And I will work at it. I've done it before. I'll do it again. I'm happy to help.
That's a really good example. I mean, that's one that's a really good example, at least in my opinion, having worked on that for years. I mean, that one's been going on for like 15 years. That's a power line that's absolutely necessary. Where it goes is subject to discussion, but it is one that is absolutely necessary. You can contrast that with a lot of the testimony we heard is on the siting of windmills. And I remember years ago, when I was still on the commission, my friend from Iowa said there was never a discussion too much about the windmills. The guys who got them sited on their property loved them, and the guys who didn't hated them. I think that's just a reality. Anyway, Senator Olson.
Maybe, and this is just a thought, that in the FSEC umbrella, when a proposal comes forward, one of the members of FSEC becomes an advocate for the proponents, and the rest are advocates. I should correct the one is an advocate for the opponents, and the rest are advocates for the proponents. That advocate would then have all the access to all the material that the proponents are putting forward, which would be much easier for them to get than a private citizen trying to find out exactly what the whole thing is. And that advocacy would be a little bit cheaper than having to go out and hire a lawyer and do the research yourself, because then it's all public information, or it should be all public information, or unless people come in with proprietary things that they don't want to explain, which would muddy the water, but at least you would have someone in FSEC, and it wouldn't be the same person every time. Each person would have a different group they would be an advocate for, and then at least the public would have an opportunity to have input and see what's going on.
You raised an interesting point. One of the things we did at the PUC, actually the legislature did at our encouragement, was create intervener funding stream, which is an amount of money that goes out there and is on the table that all of the participants, all the utilities pay into, actually, you could say the ratepayers pay, and it's just there, and most of it, they have to permit, whoever wants to intervene and use it has to submit a proposal to the PUC, and presumptive Cub gets money to do that, to represent the ratepayers directly in the case. So I'm not sure how that exactly parallels in this process, but it's something we could think about. Other comments? All right. I think we need to think a little bit more on that. Maybe I'll talk with a couple of you outside of this and see if you're willing to think about that. Maybe we can come up with a straw proposal. All right, let's move on then. Energy Development Services, and this one is probably going to take us beyond their meeting today. This is all those things that we spent a lot of time talking about. There's a full array in there of tax credits, most of which have been already killed, the energy or the SEP program, and some smaller technical assistance features. I'm not quite sure how to take all this up, if you'll. Suggestions?
I'll shoot one.
How about it?
Anytime we have credits or money that is given out by an agency to the state, it should be overseen, at least in my opinion, either by revenue or the treasury. And I think that would be the best place to put it. And if we had to have an expert give testimony as to the benefit or negative side of a tax credit, I think that would be the place to go, because it seems like AR1, our own director said that he can't track anything because of the poor computer systems, and at least those people that have that financial expertise would be those people that would be watching our money.
So when you say that, what do you mean in terms of tracking? My own perspective on this is that one of the real problems with the programs that have been created was they were sort of created out of advocacy and euphoria about how we're going to fix the world, with very little discussion by the legislature about why you're doing it or what. So I think not speaking to what happened within the department, I think if you had it at Treasury, you would have had exactly the same result. Because they didn't know what, they wouldn't have known what to track.
Well, so it's our fault then.
Huh?
It's our fault then. Legislators.
Well, it is. Very candidly, it is a legislature's fault.
The point, Mr. Chair, the point I'm trying to make is the fact that, those people that are challenged with the job to oversee our finances would be the best to guarantee that those finances came and went, and we could track the outcome and track how much we have left and how much is we have going out, et cetera, because that's their job.
Yeah.
Yes, and that's
this becoming a two-way, but my
strictly going with tax credits.
On the tax credits. Well, you know, my observation on it was, besides not knowing what it is, it wasn't very well defined what it was for, what it was composed of, or as Senator Whitsitt has pointedly out, you know, we didn't know what we didn't have. There was never any metric that said, what are you getting for it? I would contrast that with the federal energy tax credits, not necessarily advocating those, but one of the ways they controlled that is have controlled that is you only got paid on the volumetric. The idea is if you want to encourage solar or wind energy, you only get it to the extent that you generate a kilowatt, however you want to measure it. So that would be one way. The other way you could do it is if we're going to do it is suggest, which we have done with some programs, revising them, is limit how much would be available at any given time.
Well, it appears to me that this was more of a slush fund because mostly government agencies got it and then sold it off to get their cash and did. And I wasn't here when a lot of this was going on. Was that used to kind of backfill these other groups? I hate to say that, but, you know.
We're having a dialogue here, but I would disagree with you, Senator, based on the fact that, you know, the department said that there are over 9,000 recipients of one of those credits or one form or another. And I don't think we got 9,000 government units in Oregon.
Well, I just let me dig out my info here.
This is Senator Whitsitt, please take me out of this dialogue.
I would propose that this committee recommend that Oregon stops using tax credits to incentivize renewable energy. And to the extent that the state wants to continue to incentivize renewable energy, it should go to a grant system. Mm-hmm. We have spent, according to legislative revenue, well over $1.5 billion now on various different tax credits. And to the extent that those have been traded, the preponderance of them appear to have about a 30% cost factor in either discounting, in the combination of discounting and brokerage. So it's about $450 million of taxpayer money was spent on something that didn't do anything for renewable energy. It is the most inefficient thing I can imagine. It makes absolutely no sense. So why, if we're going to, if it's the policy of the state, not the politics, but the policy of the state, to incentivize renewable energy, then let's do it with grants and get rid of this whole process that is so inefficient that where 30% of the money disappears into the woodwork, and it also provides huge opportunities for favoritism, fraud, and whatever else, and how the people are selected who buy these things and who sell these things. Let's just abolish that tax credit system and go to a grant system if we're going to do it.
Other comments? Representative Volpe.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting discussion. Whatever, I'm not a big fan of the tax credit system myself, but whatever programs we use to incent particular energy usage, it seems that the Department of Energy still needs to have a role in making sure whatever projects are chosen to be incented really meet certain criteria and qualifications that are pretty specific. I don't disagree that perhaps managing tax credits, for example, or the financial end of it might be best done by another agency that has that expertise. I don't see the Department of Revenue being that agency as they kind of specialize in collections. Business Oregon, I think, was one of the recommendations that came out from some of the stakeholders that I think does have a pretty good match in terms of economic development, which I think is one of the goals of incenting different types of energies from time to time. So I think that's a big issue. If we were to move to a grant system, I'm kind of going my mind, where are we going to get the money for that? Is that, you know, going to come from the ESA to provide those grants going forward? If they're not general tax credits, or are you going to take it out of the general fund? So there's some big questions on how to do that. The tax credit program sometimes, you know, although not popular and definitely cause some stress to our general fund long term, they do borrow on the future a little bit to lessen the severity right now of that fiscal impact. I think that Business Oregon might be a better agency to help administer the financial arrangements of those incentive programs or tax credit programs, but I think the Department of Energy still has a critical role making sure those particular programs or projects meet specific criteria and qualifications and at the front end and the back end. And then if they don't, the department should have the authority to say these programs didn't cut the mustard, they shouldn't get the incentive or the tax credit. So those are just a few thoughts.
Representative, the only comment I would make is that credits, tax credits, and grants, unless they're specialists, come from the same place.
It's just a matter of time.
Yeah, it's just how you get them done. It's still general fund. Anybody else?
Senator Barrett. Senator. I just along that same line, you're absolutely right. They both come from the same source, but Representative Holpe is also correct. We obfuscate, I'm putting words in his mouth now, but we obfuscate where the money's coming from by delaying the process. And according to legislative revenues, I just got these figures this morning, but of the Betsy's, there are still $377 million of those that are redeemable. Mm-hmm. So they're a liability against our future right now. $183 million of them have been canceled, and the rest of them have been redeemed. And then there's about $21 million of EIPs that they haven't, they don't know. Chris is still working on these as far as how many have been redeemed and how many are still out there. Same thing with the biomass, the $20 million, and the Red Sea is the $78 million. They don't know how many are still out there. So we could have as much as $500 million of liability against our general fund that we've created by allowing, you know, rather than saying, okay, we're going to spend this money today on this, it's kind of like we've done with ODOT. We're going to we mortgaged our future, and now we got to pay the bill.
Right.
Yeah, just thinking about it is listening to you, that it seems to me like there's sort of three basic questions. One is the basic one is there a need to incent something, whatever something is, energy? And if the answer to that is yes, then it's how do you incent it? And there are three general ways. You can do a grant, you can do a loan, or you can do a tax credit. Those are the ways to do it. And then it's sort of how do you measure that, which is the earlier question we had. And, you know, you can measure it by output. You can measure it by nameplate if you're talking about an energy facility, what's its capacity. Or like we used to do with, energy-efficient equipment, a listing of things like that. So there are three elements there, all of which have tended to be missing in past legislation. Representative Benson and Representative Megan Peterson.
Mr. Chair, Is the focus of our discussion now on whether we should be doing this as opposed to who should be looking at it, or is this a shotgun approach?
Yes.
I
would say yes. Again, Representative, I would say it was sort of, in my mind, the first one is, do we need to do something in this area? And if the answer to that is yes, how do we do that, and how do we measure that? And then I guess after that is who should do it.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Chair, the I don't know if it's within our power to address the first issue, because legislatures are going to do what they're going to do. And we can all say, as we all have, uh-huh, tax credits are an inefficient, unfortunate device dreamed up by God knows who, and incredibly difficult to manage, and we shouldn't be using them. But that is not going to stop people from using them. So I'm really unhappy about that, having dealt with the Betsy in my entire 9-year career in this building trying to kill it. Mm-hmm. It's
that one's dead.
We hope. It has, well, kind of. Anyway, the point is, I think we can leave this committee meeting or this exercise knowing that most of us would suggest, if we're going to do these kinds of things, they need to be done by biting the bullet and writing the check, as opposed to hiding it behind a wall of tax credit confusion. But as far as the need for these things, incentives for different energy-related devices, I would hope, if we do our job right, the commission that we're hoping to develop would be able to weigh in and maybe advise us a little bit in when people come in with these different pieces of legislation suggesting tax credits are the solution to our environmental problems.
So if I can pose it back to you, we have the recommendation from the governor, and the current ones are sort of dead. They're gonna die. They're gonna sunset. So maybe a couple ways, if we think they ought to continue, we could say that generically, or we could recommend a particular bill that would do that. If we're saying no, we could just say we think they should be sunsetted, and that no, I don't know if we've got all the programs covered there. We'd have to take a look at that and say, what are we doing, and maybe go beyond that and recommend, because the legislature could kill programs whether they're set for sunset or not.
Chair, in this conversation, I am not suggesting that those, the Red Sea or several of the other programs, haven't had a value. Part of the problem is we don't have a measure of that value. And I would suggest that we've gotten caught up, I know I have, in all of the negatives that go with the Betsy. We seldom talk about whatever the benefit may have been. I've yet to see a measure of it. None of us have a measure of it. And so that's one of the reasons we're sitting here as a committee, mm-hmm, because we have no idea where we are when it comes to those expenditures. There's part of the lesson, and that's why we're here. But to say now that we don't need those programs, that would be premature for me. Now, as far as the Betsy goes, it had so many interior design difficulties, it's easy to say, let's get rid of it, and we have. The manufacturer credit or the RETSI residential credit, those we need to look at. And again, I don't like tax credits, but let's look at those programs first and see what the benefit has been before we throw them in the dumpster. That's how I would go about it. Okay. My inclination is to say I don't like them, but are we in a position yet to say we should kill them? I'm not there yet.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, you're suggesting we might want to make a recommendation that they be looked at, and if so, something along these question lines, but not make specific recommendations on individual programs other than the two that are sitting there.
Right. What I'm saying is we don't have the other side of the equation, which is the benefit generated by these tax credits. We haven't seen it. And we have, forgive me, but I've been through this conversation at least a dozen times on each of these, and still we were always plagued with not having all of the data. And that's one of the reasons we're sitting here, is because we can't have a complete conversation about these things.
I would disagree a little bit. Mr. Kaplan has been very conservative in the way he talked about these, but he did articulate some of the benefits that have come up, but couldn't quantify them.
I agree. It's the quantification, this issue, when you compare it to the cost. We don't have that.
Okay. Representative.
Thank you. So there's a lot around the tax credit. So for a lot of the time I was on, as several people here are, have been on revenue and energy and environment, it's giving a good perspective of the work that's been done, both in examining the policy behind the tax credit and then the mechanism of the tax credit itself being used versus a grant or versus a general fund appropriation. And I think that the struggle has been to have the tax credit, just because of its nature, try to make it more transparent and try to make it more to have a better sense of what the impacts of that, because I think that's that was one of the big problems with the Betsy, was the we didn't know what the consequences were going to be. There were the unforeseen consequences of it. And I think that's getting back to the question of what ODO's role in this would be. It's who has the expertise to be able to manage the functions that a tax credit would in, you know, LRO does great work in trying to, you know, put together the tax credit report on how much each of these are costing, when the expiration, what's the tail end, because that's what we're still seeing with the Betsy. It's dead, but we're still seeing the tail end of the policy here in terms of the impact on our bottom line, and making that transparent. And I think we have to find, I don't know that, I think the Department of Revenue or another agency might be better at that function. The question of using tax credit itself, I mean, we use tax credits for a plethora of things here, you know, in all sorts of different policy areas. And so I think that there is a role for it. But it's how do we as legislators make it most transparent and to get to that piece where we're able, when they're up for renewal or when we're trying to see how impactful they've been, to be able to have them structured in a way that we have the data that we need to be able to make that decision. Because that is the thing that we've been struggling is, how do we know what good these are doing? What has the impact been? There's a lot of estimates that have been done, but there hasn't been the quantitative numbers that I think all of us would like to see. And it is, I mean, for me personally, it's very disconcerting to hear that we have problems with data, that we don't have the right even database systems to support the data that we would need to even collect that. And so I think that's definitely something that we would need to address as part of the work that we're doing and the recommendations we do is to say, if we're going to continue with these, then let's make sure that we have a system in place to be able to capture the data we need.
Co-Chair Hobie.
Thank you. I think one of the things that is sometimes problematic with these tax credits is that you know, what the goal of that particular tax credit is are we trying to create a certain percentage of energy mix in our resource portfolio? And if so, should we not have a cap so we know exactly, you know, how much money in the future we're going to devote to this particular program? And so I sort of think that whether it's a grant program or a tax credit, that, you know, there's a goal to it. And once we reach that goal, it should be, you know, end itself as such. It should have a cap on the amount of dollars that it's going to cost us long run. And so I think that's one of the things that oftentimes is missing in tax credit programs, is they become the goal. They are the goal instead of having them achieve a goal. And I think we need to make sure that these programs achieve a goal with a number that keeps control of them.
That is a problem with tax credits. Unless you have a pre-qualification process, most tax credits programs, I'm thinking like manufacturer tax credits and the kinds of things, revenue doesn't know about it. You don't know how many you got out there until they file the tax return. So in my mind, that's really a good suggestion. Others? Senator Olson.
If we continue with tax credits, I think two things we need to do is be very specific as to someone coming in and requiring or asking for a tax credit, making certain that we don't get another Shepherd's Flat debacle, so that they can split companies and get more than they deserve. And two, I think we should prioritize any development that goes to Oregonians rather than selling product out of state that we give tax credits for that are built in state. because the building is fine, we get some construction jobs, but after that we lose employment and the money goes out and doesn't stay here. And I think we ought to prioritize, if we're going to give away our money, it should be for companies that are going to use it in Oregon.
Move the discussion point from giving it away to investing.
Investing.
Investing in. Senator?
Yes. I think if we read through some of the comments by Wendy Johnson of the League of Oregon Cities, certainly they appear to be recommending getting away from tax credits, even to the point of those that are currently pre-certified, as to discounting those appropriately and then writing a check for the grant, as opposed to let's get out of that business. And I think it's, if you haven't read her discussion, it's really worthwhile, I think.
Which one now?
It's Wendy Johnson's on League of Oregon Cities.
Okay.
Senator,
and then Representative.
I've listened to most of the comments, and I think I agree with most of them, Mr. Chair. I've just been thinking about if we get rid of some of these tax credits, and I'm thinking about some of them that we just reauthorized this last legislative session, like the dairy producers' biomass tax credit. Okay, so that was one that we cut the amount in half to manage the economic impact, but we extended the sunset to 7 years, so there would be certainty for the developers of these projects. And so I'm just thinking through out loud now, what if the legislature decides that the legislature still wants to incentivize projects like that? How does that change in our budgeting process if we go away from a tax credit with the 7-year sunset, which effectively becomes a contract between the state and that developer to do that project? Do we have to establish a pot of money, which from a transparency standpoint, I mean, I agree with the things that have been said by Senator Whitsitt and others. I'm wondering, like, what are the mechanics of that from a budgeting standpoint, a ways and means standpoint? This is the tension that we end up between the Revenue Committee and the Ways and Means Committee at times.
Just a comment. I think, I may be wrong on this, you do revenue, it's been a while since I served on revenue, but when you grant a tax credit, particularly with roll forward positions, when you cancel it, you have a tail.
Right.
So all those are authorized, could go forward in as many as 10 years, because
right.
Some of them have roll forward provisions. So. And generally, once they're granted, well, I'm not sure if they know those. They would know it once one was claimed for the first time. I'm beebling, but I think from a budgeting standpoint, it's still there.
Yeah, from the tax credits are still there, but from a budgeting standpoint, like let's say we're going to get rid of, biomass producers tax credit. Let's say we're just going to get rid of that, and now that, but let's say the legislature still wants that to happen, that becomes a line item in what, a Christmas tree bill? Is that where is it? I'm just thinking about how that, and is it a one-time allocation, like for capital? Because some of these are capital projects and some of them aren't. And so that I'm thinking through, that increased level of transparency also brings different timing legislatively, like how we work through
it. It has to become an appropriation.
Yeah.
An ongoing one, like a lot of other things that we do have, and it would be up to the.
Which you can count on for just 2 years, then.
Huh? No, once you have the contract, you're committed. Remember this first discussion we had about contracts? Same thing applies.
that's what I'm wondering is how that gets
how you work it out.
Grants
get
let
out. Once you got the contract, it's there. It would be up to the executive and the fiscal office to figure out how to budget for it. Representative.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So are we moving away now from whether we want the program into something more like how it should be designed?
I would rather that we not do that this morning, since we only have about 10 minutes left, and I'm feeling almost a little bit exhausted, but I'm open to whatever you have in mind.
No, I was. This was. That was. I was making an observation. This wasn't a question. Let me say this. All of the remarks that have been made to this point on this issue, in one way or another, trend toward a reflection on our failure when we design these systems to put the proper people in place to make it work. And when I say proper people, thank God we have the ones we've got. But we did not. We don't. If we're going to go forward with these kinds of programs, they have to have the quality expertise helping. Because to say they're to make them transparent is another way of saying you better have really good tax lawyers and really good CPAs to go in and do battle with the really, really good ones that come out of downtown Portland and San Francisco and New York that I got to see as we fought over Shepherd's Flat and those other places. Because that's a $10 million bill, right, that they're going to get from us. And they're not going to send in some inadequately prepared attorney or CPA. And so what I'm saying is if we're going to go forward with these kind of programs, we better be funding our departments adequately to manage these billion-dollar giveaways, yeah. Because we didn't. And that's why we're sitting here. Yeah. In part.
Mr. Chair, that would be investment, not giveaway, right?
Yeah. Well, I think the representative is exactly right. I don't think that when the legislature passed the Betsy, they had any idea there would be 9,000 applicants. And certainly they didn't, in a budgetary sense, prepare the department to deal with it.
Right.
On either way.
A couple of separate points. One, I think you talk about the 9,000 applicants. There needs to be some determination of the qualifications and the capacity of an applicant before the application is taken. I mean, we've seen, particularly, you know, about the Christmas Valley thing. Everybody's seen that. But I mean, I don't know how much to what extent that's been corrected. But if you're going to apply for a $10 million grant, you should be able to have the capacity to show that you can actually perform what you're going to do. And then the second thing, and I mentioned this before, but we don't seem to have any coordination or oversight regarding all of the credits that are due from various states, from the federal government, tax credits, grants, Energy Trust of Oregon, accelerated depreciation, loan guarantees, all these things that have value. I don't know of any entity, and I can't find any entity, that is actually looking at how much, any oversight for what any one project is able to access. And in some situations, I think those grants, credits, and all those perks have actually exceeded the value of the project.
Actually, I think you generally
agree with you.
That's certainly true of the government tax credits. I don't think that's probably true of the Energy Trust, because I think they weigh those and determination of how much they put into a project to make it affordable.
Energy Trust,
they have a different structure.
Energy Trust knows how much, but Department of Energy doesn't, or the federal government doesn't. That's my point. Yeah. Nobody's sitting up here in a catbird seat saying, how much is this guy actually getting?
Senator, I would suggest that's because it's not in the legislation, or wasn't in the legislation to do that.
Isn't that what we're doing here?
That's it. All righty. Where I think we're at is we're about 5 minutes away from our proposed stopping time, and I think this is a good place to stop. The one, just kind of recapping where we're at, it seems like we agreed on that there is a need for somebody to do nuclear safety. I think we had an agreement on the emergency preparedness site, still not saying where, just that there was a need for that. Seem to have a strong agreement on the need for some form of strategic energy planning with some clearly defined mission statement, which we haven't done yet, and a tendency to believe that there might be a need for a commission if it was properly structured. Energy facility siting, we're still thinking about that one a little bit. And let's see, development services. I think this is one we still have to spend some time. We've been kicking around, but I don't sense that we've reached a consensus yet on We've reached a consensus that the current programs were not well designed or structured or thought through. But how we go forward, we haven't. The one piece that I think that we need to spend some time with, because it's been around a long time, is the loan program that's ending. There's a real question on whether that should continue or not. I would suggest that we ought to spend some time on that next time. The other thing is I think we ought to bring back fresh in front of us, Beth, is the list of tax credits and what the where they're at now. Because there are some. We've been talking mainly about the Betsy and one other, but there's some other smaller ones that Senator Edwards is bringing up, and we probably ought to think a little more clearly about that. In the interim, as I asked early on, I would ask each of you to think a little bit about that question of energy planning and mission statement and jot down your thoughts on that and share them with Beth so we can all have that the benefit of that before the next meeting. And also, if we were to structure a commission, what would you think it ought to look like and what would be its role, that sorts of things. Co-Chair Hovey, am I missing anything? You got the next meeting.
No, I think I would just add that we didn't spend any time in discussion, and maybe it was probably under energy planning and innovation, of talking about the policies the legislature has adopted in regards to the climate issues, greenhouse gas emissions, and the role of the Department of Energy, the huge role they have in that, and as well with the Global Warming Commission, and how we integrate those policies not just with the Department of Energy, but with our state agencies in general. And I think there's a piece there that's sort of missing as we have adopted statutes and policies for the state of Oregon, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of coordination or direction on how the Department of Energy is supposed to achieve those. They staff the Global Warming Commission, and you know how we really integrate that into their mission and providing the resources they need to make sure that state government is accountable to the policies that legislature gives it. So I think that has to be brought into this discussion at some point. It's more of a mission, but also a planning piece as well.
And I did think I would call your attention, if you haven't, it's worth going back on the commission thought and rereading Angus Duncan's piece on that. Not suggesting it's in, but he did have some pretty good thoughtful piece, and I thought the League of Cities piece was pretty good as well, among others. There were many others in there that were very good.
They were all great.
We had a good group of recommendations. All righty. Anything else? Beth, do you need anything else from us?
I do not.
Are we good?
Good.
Anything before we adjourn?
Beth, do we have papers work to fill out for today?
Oh. Paperwork?
Paperwork. Oh, the important
yes.
stuff.
Yes, mileage. Sorry. I don't know why we forget that every time.
Okay.
No, you don't get paid.
We are adjourned. Thank you for... Okay.
No, you don't get paid.
We are adjourned. Thank you for...